This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn. This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
This is the Quality News Network. Tragedy fell upon former Pakistani Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto's homecoming today when two bombs blew up in the crowd, killing at least 115 well-wishers. Ms. Bhutto is unhurt, although her windshield was shattered. She was returning to Pakistan after a self-imposed exile that began when General Musharraf seized power in a coup 8 years ago. She and Musharraf are expected to govern together in a power-sharing agreement. Pakistan's interior minister said the attacks were an, quote, act of terrorism aimed at sabotaging democracy, end quote. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert has returned from his meeting with President Putin in Moscow. Putin said that he'll brief Olmert next week on his meeting this week with President Ahmadinejad in Tehran. In the brief meeting, Putin acknowledged Olmert's concern over Iran's nuclear pursuit, the main reason for the hastily called meeting. The general commanding NATO forces in Afghanistan says a shipment of high-tech weapons intercepted in September definitely came from Iran. Both Baghdad and the White House are asking Turkey for a restraint in using military force against Kurdish separatists in northern Iraq. Turkey's parliament has approved a government request to allow troops to cross over the border. Democrats failed to get enough votes to override President Bush's veto of the $35 billion State Children's Health Insurance Program, or SCHIP. President Bush saw the bill as another step by the Democrats to enact national health. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said that she'd introduce another version of the bill in 2 weeks. Five Air Force officers are facing dismissal in connection with the August 30th incident where a B-52 bomber mistakenly flew six nuclear-tipped cruise missiles on a three-and-a-half-hour flight from Minot Air Force Base in North Dakota to Barksdale in Louisiana. The firings follow a six-week probe that found lapses in long-established procedure. In Tulsa, Richard Roberts, the president of Oral Roberts University, has taken a leave. He's been accused of using donors' money to support a wealthy lifestyle. Joey Bishop passed away from multiple causes at his home last night in Newport Beach, California. The last living member of Frank Sinatra's Rat Pack was 89. And the co-star of the famous beach kissing scene opposite Burt Lancaster in From Here to Eternity has passed away. Deborah Carr was 86. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Do you know the expression, put on your best face? Never was that suggestion more important, especially in the increasingly fast-paced world of the Internet. The people at Byte Technology are experts in making sure that the hits their clients' websites receive turn into a satisfying visit and more business. Byte gets to the core of every business and brings the heart of the operation to the Internet. Whether you are selling products or services, reaching out for new business, or supplying information to a sector of the business community, it is vital that you attract the right visitors and deliver them what they need quickly and effectively. Byte Technology goes further, providing maintenance updates to keep your site ahead of the curve, ahead of the competition. Assure your company's future. Talk with the team at Byte Technology to learn how you can put on your best internet face. Byte Technology. See the difference at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178.
At least half a dozen states are reporting incidents of antibiotic-resistant staph infections. A number of the cases involve school athletes. Schools in the Midwest and East sent students home today so their campuses could be sanitized. A new malaria vaccine is proving to be safe and highly effective in tests on African babies. The prototype RTSS has been in formulation for 20 years. Testing has cautiously been widening since. The Federal Communications Commission might soon abolish the old rule that bars a company to own both a newspaper and a television or radio station in the same market. The five FCC commissioners are said to be in agreement on relaxing the rule. Washington Mutual, the nation's third largest mortgage lender, posted a 72% drop in quarterly profit. Nation's third largest bank, J.P. Morgan Chase, beat Wall Street expectations with a 2% increase. Jobless claims based on layoff notices shot up for the first time since February. and Google brought on 2,000 new employees in the third quarter and posted a 57% increase in revenue, defying Wall Street expectations. ComScore reports the internet search giant has captured 57% of the internet search market. On Wall Street today, it was a mixed day at the close. The Dow off 3.5 points at 13,888. The NASDAQ up 6 and the S&P 500 off 1. Oil is trading at $89.47 a barrel. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Michael Coleman.
Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 58 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is Thursday, October the 18th, so if you're listening at about 9 p.m. Eastern Time on a Thursday evening, October the 18th, you're indeed listening to a live show. And you're welcome to call in. It is a talk or call-in and conversation type of show, and you're welcome to phone in. I have a guest coming up at the bottom of the hour. Her name is Julia Serrano, and a fantastic guest. We've had her on the show before. In fact, if you missed it, you really ought to go back and check out the archive. She probably did more to help people understand what being a transsexual is like and the issues that they face than anyone I have ever talked to. On this show. Her name is Julia Serrano, and she was on prior on July the 19th. You can get to that at the strictlyconfidentialradio.com site. I'll tell you more about that in a minute. As I was saying, Thursday, October 18, it's a live show. You are welcome to call in. We do want to welcome aboard also our archive listeners or our podcast listeners. You too are welcome, and we're glad that you do stream this program and when you're able to do so. A special shout-out to my old friend Kathy in Jacksonville, Florida, who streams this show religiously every day, the very next day. Kathy and I were friends back in the 70s, if you go back that far, if you could appreciate that, in Tallahassee. We were friends in the 70s, and all of a sudden, out of the clear blue sky, she Googled my name, just wondering about me and what had become of me, and discovered Strictly Confidential, and so she listens regularly. Welcome, Kathy. And to you other folks who listen to Strictly Confidential via the archives, we'd love to hear from you, too. Most of the emails I receive are from our live stream listeners, but we'd like to know more about the listeners who listen via archive. Again, the show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com. There you'll find links to all of the guests and to the audio archives from the past show. And as I said, Julia's previous show was on July 19th. Just click on July and the strictlyconfidentialradio.com site if you'd like to hear that, and then go to her calendar date, which was the 19th. You'll find links on strictlyconfidentialradio.com also to the chat room, which is active as we speak. I'm indeed keeping an eye on the chat room. And you'll find links to the main head-on radio network site, of which I am a part. You can find out about all of the other progressive programming on the network. There's programming all during the day. And, in fact, there's a new show that starts after mine, begins at 11 p.m. Eastern. It's not really a new show. It's one of our daytime shows has moved to the evening and is, in fact, called Cup of Joe with our friend Joe Vecchio. A wonderful program. If you haven't heard it, please join us after strictlyconfidentialradio.com for Joe Vecchio's live show. He's now calling it Nighttime Cup of Joe, and that comes on immediately following this program at 11 p.m. I'll try to remind you of that later. You'll find links on Strictly Confidential's MySpace page. You'll find links on the radio strictlyconfidentialradio.com page to Strictly Confidential's MySpace page. I will get this right. You see, it's a dark and stormy night here. Oh, my stars, the weather we've had bands of thunderstorms, extreme lightning. So, I mean, it was flashing outside like a gay disco at midnight. You wouldn't have believed it. So far, the Internet has hung on. I haven't had any glitches. There have been no power glitches, so we are doing well. Doggy has assumed the storm position, which means her head is shoved as far under the magic dresser as humanly or doggedly possible, so that she is thoroughly protected from lightning by the magical qualities of the anti-static dresser. She cannot be touched by lightning when she's under there. She's firmly convinced of it. That's her story, and she's sticking to it. Again, Julia will join us at the bottom of the hour. My goodness, there's so many things to tell you guys about. Quite likely, a lot of this will flow over until tomorrow evening. Tomorrow evening, so far, is a Just Us show, although I'm waiting to hear back from the Gleason people who are starting gay-straight alliances in schools across the country. If the Gleason people do join us, if they're able to join us tomorrow evening, it will be a Gleason representative and also one of their students, which will be an interesting program. I'm hoping to hear back from them tomorrow. He needed to check with a student to be sure that they were available on Friday, if not soon. But if they cannot join us tomorrow evening, it will be a Just Us show. We have lots of music to get to tomorrow and lots of stories and lots of audio. But we're going to begin now. Oh, my goodness. This was a huge shock to me. I just came across this afternoon. We've all heard hate speech. We've heard the Westboro Baptist Church. We've heard all of the hate speech that they put out. It's all in clean, well, maybe not clean, but you'd have to say it's in fairly plain everyday English. We've heard Dobson prattle on in his plain everyday English with LGBT hate speech. We've heard Donald Wildman from the American Family Association prattle on with his gay hate speech. But have you ever heard LGBT hate speech in Russian? Well, you're going to hear it tonight. There is a group of people called Watchmen on the Walls. Now, these people held a conference last August in the capital of Siberia in the Russian Federation. I'm not even going to risk trying to pronounce the capital of Siberia. We have some listeners who know about such things, and I'm not one of them. But trust me, it is the capital of Siberia, so it's way up north. Now, a fellow named Scott Lively appeared at that conference, and, well, I'll start at the beginning. The international anti-gay extremist group Watchmen on the Walls is going to be holding another conference in Linwood, Washington. Linwood is basically a part of Seattle. It's a huge city that just flows together. It starts tomorrow, actually, October 19 through 21. I don't think the people at the Linwood Convention Center really know who they're dealing with. The convention center said, well, we're not talking about the Ku Klux Klan. If it was the Ku Klux Klan, we wouldn't be renting the space to them at the Linwood Convention Center. But, oh, they do not know. The rhetoric the Watchmen use has been violent. It encourages warfare in all of their speeches and all of their writings. It was founded in Redmond, which is where Microsoft is located, Redmond, Washington. I believe it's Redmond, or is that, if it's not in Redmond, I'm sure they have an office in Redmond. Microsoft basically is everywhere in Seattle. It was founded in Redmond by a preacher named Kenneth Hutcherson. He is a Holocaust revisionist. And by that, I mean that he says that, basically it's from his book. It's called The Pink Swastika. He blames the rise of Nazi Germans and all of Germany on gay people. And, more about that in a minute. But it's revisionist history. He and Scott Lively and a Latvian a megachurch pastor, Alex Lediev, they all formed the Watchmen on the Walls, and it's gained a tremendous amount of influence in Latvia and Lithuania, Ukraine, and Russia. And they're forming a band of anti-gay and anti-gay hate groups all through the area. In fact, it led to violence at the last gay pride celebration when a group of skinheads threw excrement at the people who were marching. The tone is becoming increasingly violent. And you see, that area has previously been known as gay-friendly, at least in a way. At least it wasn't that overt, but they're rapidly changing that. An example here in the U.S., in July 2007, a group of Russian-speaking men killed a 26-year-old gay man near Sacramento. Now, the two men were charged with connection with his death. One of them fled to Russia. The FBI is looking for the other one. This is explained. Let me put it like this. This Russian clip that we're about to run runs 40 minutes, so we can't possibly run the entire clip. Why don't we just go ahead and run the... I have about 4 or 5 minutes of it to give you an idea of what's going on. This took place in August in the capital of Siberia by a group called Watchmen on the Walls. Bob, if you'd run that audio, please.
The Watchmen on the Walls is an international coalition.
Стража на стенах – это международная коалиция.
Of Christian political activists.
Христиан-активистов.
It is an organization that is designed to change the societies in which we live in.
Эта организация создана для того, чтобы изменять общество, в котором мы живем.
There is a war that's going on in the world.
В мире сейчас идет война.
There is a war that is waging across the entire face of the globe.
И эта война идет по всему миру, по всему лицу земли.
It's been waging in the United States for decades.
В Соединенных Штатах она уже продолжается десятилетиями.
And it's been waging in Europe for decades.
Также в Европе она продолжается уже десятки лет.
It's a war between Christians and homosexuals.
Война между христианами и гомосексуалистами.
This is a war that you haven't seen yet.
Эту войну вы еще не видели.
You've only seen a little bit of it.
Вы всего чуть-чуть от этого видели.
Because Russia has been protected against the homosexual movement by the communists.
Потому что Россию спасли от гомосексуального движения коммунисты.
One of the few good things that the Soviet Union did.
Это одна из тех малых вещей, из добрых вещей, что для вас сделал Советский Союз.
Is it stopped the sexual revolution from infecting the Russian people?
Он защитил вас от влияния сексуальной революции, которая повлияла на людей.
But all across the West, the sexual revolution changed the culture of the nations.
Но на Западе эта сексуальная революция изменила культуру наций.
The sexual revolution embraces the idea that there should be no limits on sexual conduct.
Идея сексуальной революции заключается в том, чтобы у тебя не было никаких правил в сексуальном поведении, никаких ограничений.
And this is a design of the devil to destroy civilization.
Это создал дьявол для того, чтобы уничтожить цивилизацию.
Because civilization is based upon the natural family.
Потому что цивилизация, основа цивилизации является естественная семья.
One man and one woman.
Один мужчина и одна женщина.
United in marriage.
Соединяются в браке.
Bringing children into the world.
Они рождают детей в этот мир.
And training them to replace them in the next generation.
И готовят их для того, чтобы они стали следующим поколением.
That's the foundation of civilization.
Это основание цивилизации.
And is the heart of Christian living.
И это центр христианской жизни.
And in the United States, where the sexual revolution began.
И когда сексуальная революция началась в Соединенных Штатах.
It was the homosexual political movement that designed this strategy to attack Christianity.
И именно гей-движение США было создано для того, чтобы атаковать христианство.
The homosexual movement teaches sexual freedom.
Гомосексуальный...
And worst of all, we teach sexual freedom. He goes on to explain the situation I brought up a few moments ago in Sacramento, where the gay man was murdered in a public park. He explains in his speech later, which was translated. By the way, this is an opulent assembly room. This is not like some back room wooden, you know, thrown together stage. This is all very professional and well lit, etc., that where this was all filmed in Siberia. He goes on to explain the situation in Sacramento. He claims that there was a group of homosexuals and that they were very drunk. And one of the homosexual men was taking off his pants. And there were children at the park. And a Russian man, these are the Russian men who have fled the country and are being looked for by the FBI. A Russian man went over there to these homosexuals and he was rebuking them. We just love that word, rebuke. We know right where it comes from. And then and there a fight started. And the Russian man punched the homosexual. The audience at this point shouts and applauds. And he says, oh, no, 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 don't. The man was very drunk. The homosexual was very drunk. He was very drunk. And he fell down and hit his head and he died. This is, of course, not the same version that the witnesses give. At that point, the audience also applauds and laughs. He says, now the Russian man has been accused of murder and the FBI is seeking him. And all of the powers of Sacramento have been accusing all of the Russian community of being murderers. And the goal is to silence everyone who speaks against homosexuality. And this is a very dangerous situation because we don't want homosexuals to be killed. We want them to be saved. Amen. And the crowd all shouts, Amen. And, of course, later he no doubt gets to his book, The Pink Swastika, which blames the rise of Nazism in Germany on the gays, revisionist history. You know, this one came out of the blue, kids. I knew that we were sending over there some of the ex-gay movement. Now, this is a story we talked about on this program recently, that the Exodus fellow, what's his face, is over there talking about how you can be healed and it's a matter of choice, et cetera, et cetera. We know all the arguments, we know all the lines, but I had no idea a group this radical was over there rousing up the skinheads. He says that no clear-thinking person believes that the homosexual ethic and the family-based society can coexist. One must prevail at the expense of the others, meaning a fight to the death. He says there's a war going on, and the war is waged across the entire face of the globe. All of this is being translated word for word. And he repeats that it's a war between Christians and homosexuals more than once during his 40-minute speech. And he repeats the phrase that it's of the devil to destroy civilization more than once during his speech. I'm just speechless. It's hard to imagine a group like this springing up in Washington, of all the progressive places, and Portland, Oregon, too, a very progressive place. And Bellevue, that's the name I was trying to think of. Microsoft's based in Bellevue, if I'm not mistaken. Redmond is south of Seattle, if I'm not mistaken. So, in any case, apparently this fellow has a huge reputation up there. I'm going to have to do some more research about him and how he got started and how we are, in fact, supposedly started the Holocaust. I'm sure that will be very interesting. He has a website. I assume it's called Watchmen on the Walls. I haven't even bothered to visit it. He, according to my reference here, he promotes the protection of traditional Christian values and morals, and because the Christians are under threat of extinction. This is a fellow is also the host of a Russian language who is part of that group. He's part of it. He's host of a Russian language anti-gay radio show in Sacramento. An anti-gay radio show. Can you believe this, kids? It's like Peter and the anti-Peter, okay? The anti-Peter is on the West Coast, and the Peter is on the East Coast. And the trumpets of Jericho sounded. Oh, Jesus Christ. And the Mississippi rose and flooded the lands. I'm sorry if I don't know what to say. This astounds me. He says if we allow the people who hate God to take control of all the centers of power, then they will change all the rules and they will put barriers in the way of the gospel, which apparently he is not familiar with, and they will prevent us from telling the truth to the people around us. But if the people of God can step forward and take control of the centers of power, then we can make the rules work in the favor of the gospel, which apparently he's not familiar with. And we can use, oh, you're sitting down for this, kids, and we can use the government to help us tell the message of Jesus Christ. And we can use the government to help us tell the message of Jesus Christ. God deliver us from the Christians. And he repeats this phrase, and we must do this. He's screaming when he says this. And we must do this. He repeats that over and over and over and over. I promise you I'll follow up on this and find out more about Watch from the Walls. I think some of our chatters are familiar with this fellow too, and or know something about him. It just came as news to me. There is an organization that desperately needs your money, and it's not us. Although we do need money to stay on the air, there is another one. And I'm specifically addressing the LGBT community on this because we keep saying that we are a community, and if we are a community, that means we help each other. Well, it's time to live up to the name We Are a Community. Please stop by Iraqi LGBT UK. The UK means United Kingdom. It's spelled I-R-A-Q-I L-G-B-T UK. Iraqi LGBT UK dot blogspot.com. As I've told you in the past, there is the persecution of LGBT people in Iraq is quite serious. We're murdered daily. There's been a fatwa, which means a call to death by the religious leaders. The religious leaders have ordered us to be killed in the most brutal possible way. And believe me, there are many brutal possible ways. There are a few safe houses there, which are sponsored by the only LGBT group in Iraq. Two of the safe houses are in a situation where they're about to close. Each safe house serves 10 to 12 people. It costs about $1,800 a month, $800 for rent, usually paid 3 months in advance, $400 for salaries of two armed guards for each house, which is essential, $600 a month for gas, fuel, and electric generators. You realize they have no electricity there. And for clean drinking water and hygienic supplies and food. If you want to compare that to Halliburton, Halliburton got $10 billion in 2004. That means that the safe houses, there could be just under 500,000 shelters per year. But two of the houses are in danger of closing because the funding is very low. If you can possibly help with this, please do. This is a matter of life and death. These people, and it's a lot our fault. The instances of anti-gay and anti-lesbian and anti-transgendered violence has skyrocketed beyond your wildest dreams since we have gone into that country to liberate them. They also try to help AIDS patients who definitely need antiviral drugs. You see, you can't go to the government, what's basically doesn't exist, and say that you need help getting your AIDS medications because that makes you immediately killed because you must be an LGBT person. Basically, they're doomed. If you can send a few bucks to this organization, you will probably save 50 lives. And indeed, my friends, if we are an LGBT community, then damn it, let's be community. Community means we help each other. Community means we don't leave each other behind. Again, there is a donate button on this page. It's linked in with PayPal, and it is iraqilgbtuk.blogspot.com. And you'll find more details about what's going on in Iraq. And If you can help in any way, please do. They're trying to do some fundraising through various LGBT publications, and I'm not sure if I could live with myself if I didn't tell you about it. When we come back from this bottom of the hour break, we're going to be playing a special track. I've asked Bob to run it at the end of the break, so we'll be coming back from break with a complete song. It's a track that I'll tell you about it when the song completes. It's a special track. When we come back from break, we should have our guest with us, Julia Serrano, who is a trans activist, among so many other things. And so as we head into the break, this is Peter Godbold. You're listening to Strictly Confidential.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It wasn't exactly planes, trains, and automobiles on Head On with Bob Kincaid.
This is what the Bush administration Justice Department didn't want you to see back in 2001. They took out and they huffed the marker a little bit, and then they went, oh, cool. And they wiped out the name where it says the plane was chartered either by the Saudi Arabian royalty family or Osama bin Laden. Somebody's got to call up and say, good afternoon. Thank you for calling Ryan International Flights. How may I help you?
Hello. This is Osama bin Laden, and I would like to rent a Boeing 727. Do you have one handy?
Oh, just a moment. Let me check. It's a Mr. bin Laden wants to know if we got a 727. Do we, Harry, do we have a 727?
Yeah, we got a 727 just sitting there on the lot. Going cheap.
There's nothing here. Nothing to look at. Keep moving. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. The 6'7" Arab with the portable dialysis machine and the white robes.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, weeknights, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the story about a group of kids who volunteered.
We fixed stuff, did some art projects with the kids.
Cleaned up the park.
We worked in the woods.
I just wanted to do something.
We fixed up this house.
Did something for the planet.
Hey, that was all I needed. And you know what? It was great.
It was a blast.
At first, they didn't know each other.
I didn't know anyone.
Well, that didn't last long.
This guy is really funny.
Me?
These are my new friends. These are really good new friends.
Are you into it?
Are You Into It is a volunteer program for kids like you who care. If you want to make a difference in your community and make friends, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH or check out our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
This definitely made a difference.
I feel like I can do everything now.
Yeah!
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
I just heard a joke that I liked a lot, but I forget.
And that is by a group called Bite Size. And Bite Size is the group that is Julia Serrano's. Julia Serrano is our guest this evening. Bite Size has released two critically acclaimed CDs and toured up and down the West Coast and radio play. And she could be a music guest, but Julia is not a music guest. In fact, one of our news ninjas, when he was posting the information about the show, emailed me, "My goodness, she's everything." She didn't know how to categorize. And yes, in fact, she is everything. She's an Oakland, California-based writer and spoken word performer and a singer and has a band. She's a trans activist. She's a biologist. She's the author of Whipping Girl, A Transsexual Woman on Sexism and the Scapegoating of Femininity. Her writings have appeared in a list as long as my arm of various magazines and websites. Julia appeared on this program in July, July 19th, as I mentioned earlier, and we haven't gotten over it yet. She has come up many, many times on this show. She literally blew us away, perhaps one of the most articulate trans activists on the planet, and she taught us all a thing or two. Julia, I'm so glad you could be with in the show. Welcome back to Strictly Confidential.
Hi, thanks to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming back. Julia, when I originally contacted you, it's been at least a month ago. I was going to have you on the show and still want to talk about it. The latest thing with Bailey, the so-called scientist and the write-up that he did that the New York Times did about him and your reply to that in the Feministing website. And those are important things, but today we've had so much going on with the ENDA legislation that we might want to talk about that too. I want to point out that Dennis Kucinich was one of the people that voted against it in committee. In fact, he quoted the Declaration of Independence. He quoted it out loud. He said, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men and women are created equal, and that they're endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." And when you listen to these words, he says, we know now that they didn't mean men, and it doesn't just mean white people, and it doesn't just mean straight people, it means all people, meaning that the transgender community has been left out of it in this version that has passed in a highly controversial atmosphere. Julia, what are your thoughts on this?
So I didn't hear exactly what happened today, but is it the so-called ENDA light version, the one that has sexual orientation but not gender identity?
Exactly. Yes, it did pass the committee, and there were four people who voted against it. There were four Democrats, if I recall. I have a list of them somewhere, but I don't have it here in front of me. And of course, the regular cadre of Republicans and we have Barney Frank going on. Barney Frank really ticked me off the other day. He was going on and on about, where has the transgender community been? We needed them all along. How come they're just now saying something about this? And where have they been all this time? I just thought it was poorly said, and I just couldn't believe that he said stuff like that.
Yeah, that's kind of ironic, being that we were at Stonewall, and the early gay and lesbian movement in the 70s definitely went out of their way to marginalize gender variant people and gender nonconforming people in order to gain acceptance. So that's where we were.
Well, I completely agree. And this whole thing about passing it without including transgender people, Julia, you and I both know Bush is going to veto this anyway. So why not send up the version that we want? What possible inconvenience is it causing them to go ahead and send up a version that includes all of us?
Yeah, well, first off, Bush is going to veto no matter what happens, right?
Right.
So in a lot of ways, this is going to be, a token gesture. If you're going to make a token gesture in order to prove a point that these people should have these rights, you would think you would make it an inclusive bill rather than a non-inclusive bill. Second of all, and while I appreciate all allies of transgender people who've been very vocal in fighting in order for the gender identity inclusion in the bill, I think it's really important to point out that it's not a matter of just leaving transgender people behind. This is a matter of leaving anyone who's, whether you're gay, lesbian, or bisexual, if you're gender nonconforming, if you're considered a little too feminine for a man or a little too masculine for a woman, this bill that has just passed will not protect you. I can name a couple groups, legal groups, for example, the National Center for Lesbian Rights, GLAAD, Lambda Legal, the ACLU, all these groups have actually opposed this bill. And the reason why they've opposed it is because a lot of the cases that come up, the people who are most often discriminated, the people from the gay, lesbian, and bisexual community who are most often discriminated against, especially with regards to employment, are those who, you know, act, who come off as a little too feminine for men and a little too masculine for women. And
well, you know, Julia, that brings to mind the story about the woman, I think her name was Farmer, and it happened in New York City. She and a group of friends, she went to the restroom, and a bouncer came in and threw them out on the street because she was presenting in a masculine way, or she looked too masculine. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that story? It happened just a while back.
Yeah, I heard about it. I didn't know all the details about it, but yeah.
Well, just that it reminds me of this, that she wouldn't be covered either.
That's right. This is something that the National Center for Lesbian Rights said. They said that this bill is a bill no competent attorney representing the gay, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community would ever support. So that's someone from the National Center for Lesbian Rights, not transgender. other groups have said these strong points along this line because the fact is that especially because the bill that passed, and this is where Barney Frank is very wrong in this, that the fact that the bill was originally had gender identity and then it was decided to exclude that from the bill, basically that sets the precedent so that in the future, if an employer fires someone because they're a feminine gay man or a butch lesbian woman, if those people are fired and they say, well, I'm going to, you know, sue you because you fired me illegally because of my sexual orientation, they can say, no, I fired you because you're a butch lesbian, a butch woman or a feminine man. And
well,
it basically leaves this gaping loophole that is really a shame because whatever doesn't get covered in this bill will have to be covered on its own. And obviously, any group that's just on its own, it's hard to build the coalitions in order to get something passed. This is a very rare opportunity, and it's a shame that the version that went through doesn't have gender identity.
Well, Julia, I completely agree. Before you came in the air, I was going on and on about another story about an hour using the word LGBT community. And if, in fact, we are a community, we stick together. We understand what community means. It's an extended family. We don't go... it's like leaving a soldier behind. It's so not what we're about. And it's the politicians who are forcing this through. What is the pressure? What is it that they think that it's so important to get it through at any cost, which means the cost to people who express differently or to transgendered people?
Well, I think that a lot of the people, such as Bonnie Frank, who are pushing it through, I think that what they're worried about is the idea of someone getting up on, the floor of the Congress and talking about, you know, this bill would protect men who wear dresses and men who want their penises cut off, right? Because everything always boils down to the men in dresses and the men who want their penises cut off.
Oh, how well said.
Yeah, and the thing is that I think there's a lot of embarrassment. I think that there's a lot of, I think Barney Frank has a lot of shame, you know, and I think that there are, sadly, there have been a number of editorials that have come out, and there was a piece, I forget who the author was in Salon.com, who wrote a piece that was kind of along the same lines as the comment that you mentioned with Bonnie Frank earlier, like, you know, where are these transgender people coming from? I think the piece was called something like, who decided that the T was going to be an LGBT? And there are these sentiments that have been coming forward, and they're sentiments by very, what I presumably very straight acting gay people because most of the ones who most queer people, most LGBT people understand that there's a reason why all of us are confused, why mainstream straight society confuses all of us. And it's because they see us all as the same. They see us all as, you know, we're basically all of us are at the margins of what's considered normal with regards to sexuality and gender and all of that. And I think that a lot of people who are in the LGBT community who have been opposed to the gender identity inclusion within the bill are people who have a lot of shame about it. And it's kind of the whole thing, oh, well, we're just like you except for our sexual orientation, you know. Well, not all LGBT people are just like you, meaning just like straight people. Obviously, there are lots of transgender people who are lesbian, gay, and bisexual. There are also lots of people who are a part of the LGB community who eventually, at some point in their lives, may identify as trans or transgender in one way or another. There are lots of people in the LGB community who are partners of trans people. You know, transgender people are in the community, and gender nonconforming people are very much in the LGBT community. And it's just a shame that they're leaving this huge loophole behind with regards to the bill that was passed.
Well, I completely agree. You are helping to combat that, though, and you did such a fine job when you were with us last time. I've been recommending people hear that previous show. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because a comment that was made to an article that was published in Common Dreams today. The Common Dreams article was not in favor of excluding transgendered people from the bill, and it went on about that to some detail. One of the comments, however, is so typical, I think, of the group of people that want it separated. This woman writes, "As a lesbian, I've never understood the inclusion of bisexual and transgendered folks. I don't support their groups that refer to themselves as LGBT and now LGBTQ. I support bisexuals and transgendered people's civil rights, but why tag them onto our long-term fight for our rights? I just don't get it." And you've explained that so eloquently. You go back to Stonewall and before.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about "I don't get it," yeah, you know, what can we do? We shout from the rooftops. We talk about, you know, this example, this radio program. We try to communicate with the straight community and the LGBT community to explain things to people. God knows you educated me. You do it every day. You travel the whole country presenting to universities about and transgendered studies. You're well known for this.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, I think the people who say, "Oh, I just don't get it," tend to be people. I mean, let's be honest. Basically, we live in a country that is often very selfish, and a lot of times, as individuals, we're just going through with our lives, and we kind of have kind of a selfish attitude of like wanting to protect ourselves, but not really caring so much what happens to other people. Which anyone who's involved in any kind of activism knows is a really, really false assumption. And it's a false assumption because the fact is that the powers that be, they want to marginalize lots of us. They want to marginalize all of us in the LGBT community because we differ from the norm with regards to gender and sexuality. There are a lot of, you know, whether it's racism or classism or ableism or whatever. I mean, basically all of these different types of prejudice that are out there are all rooted in the same idea, that there's one group who decides that they're normal and they have power and they're the dominant group and they decide that the other group doesn't count. And it's really important, any activist will tell you, that the only way all of us as individual groups, individually, none of us can change the entire system. None of us can change all the laws. None of us can change everybody's attitude. But together, by being good allies with each other, and that's not just only within the LGBT community, but also you know, with allies with people of color and people who are economically disadvantaged and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, if we recognize that we're all kind of in the same boat, or if not in the same boat, we're in very similar boats, if we recognize that, then we can all help each other out and actually work so that we live in a more fair and just society. Unfortunately, a lot of people tend to be a little on the selfish side, and they're just like, well, this doesn't affect me. And it's like the person you're talking about who made that comment, obviously they think that gender identity doesn't help them. And I keep hearing people talking about, you know, oh, the transgenders, oh, transsexuals, like, why should we care about transsexuals? And, you know, for one thing, we're potential allies, and together we can help each other change the world. But even if you are selfish, if the thing is that if you're a lesbian, gay, or bisexual, and if you're gender nonconforming in any way, shape, or form, the bill that has gone through and that will go on to be voted on will not necessarily protect you. So I think some of it is selfishness, but also some of it is just not really looking at the big picture.
Well, I have to completely agree, and also you have to, at least in my mind, it's easy to see that the people that are saying, well, let them do it separately, we have to do this incrementally, it doesn't really affect me, we've been struggling forever, and they can just handle it later, we'll go back for them, are the same people who 5 years from now will be comfortable and couldn't care less and won't lift a finger to help the transgendered or the other community come along. In other words, you know, we'll give you a hand later, then later happens and there's no handout stretch. This is always the way it works.
That's right. I mean, people have used the later strategy on LGB groups, you know, like, I mean, how many times have you heard, you know, people with regards to, like, same-sex marriage? And with that, I mean, the Democratic Party has kind of made this really... just internally after the second presidential election where Bush won, after that, the Democratic Party made it very clear that, like, same-sex marriage is off the table. And their thing was, you know, that has to wait. It's more important for us to win the White House, right? And I'm sure all the straight people in the Democratic Party, that works for them, right? But what you have there is you have the Democratic Party saying, wait, 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 now's not the right time, just wait a bit, you know, these things take time, we'll change things slowly. And it's the same attitude that makes lots of LGB folks, you know, really angry and upset at the Democratic Party and their wussiness with regards to same-sex marriage are the same people now turn around to trans people and also just gender nonconforming people in general and just say, you know, oh, well, you have to wait. I mean, it's very hypocritical.
Well, it is. Do you think some of this huge rush to get this passed anyway, regardless of the fact that 300 LGBT groups have been in favor of not passing it, stripped down, have talked to Pelosi or at least contacted her via mail or petition or however, do you think part of it is this whole do-nothing Congress? You know, Congress has an approval rating just about where Bush is at this point for not getting anything done. Do you think they're just desperate to look like they got something done? Is that the problem?
Maybe it is. To be honest, I'm not... For me, like, following mainstream politics is kind of like, I listen to NPR a bit, and then I watch, like... Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert. So I'm not one of those people who, like, follows... religiously all of the ins and outs of what's going on behind the scenes.
You'll live longer. You'll definitely, yeah. Your mental health will be much, much greater.
Yeah, and I think that, it could be that they just want to show that they've done something. It could be that they really, even though Bush will probably veto this, that they want to make a strong statement to all the different groups that are included in ENDA as it's written now, that, you know, that we're looking out for you and to try to build support that way. But being that, A, Bush is going to veto it no matter what happens, I mean, it doesn't really make sense to leave this out. And second of all, like I said, This isn't just about leaving transgender people behind, but it makes it so that a lot of people won't be covered. People who think they'll be covered because of sexual orientation actually won't, because if this bill, as it's written now, without gender identity gets passed, what will happen is employers, they're not idiots, right? And if an employer wants to fire you, and because they're bothered by the fact that you're queer or the fact that they're worried about what customers will think, as soon as this type of bill gets passed, you know, there's this precedent that gender identity is not included, and employers will just turn around and say, oh, well, I didn't fire you because of your sexual orientation. I fired you because you're gender nonconforming.
Perfect. Exactly. Julia, that's exactly it. And just as a by the way, apparently there is it's expected that the transgender community will rally over this. And I can tell you why I'm saying that. The Washington, D.C. police chief ordered more respect today for transgender arrestees. Oh, dear God, help us. He says the order sets the highest standard in the nation, and he's saying that regarding transgender people and how they express or how they present, that when they are arrested, not if, but when they are arrested, officers should write "at risk" on the arrest form to indicate that they may experience hostility from other arrestees and that they should be placed in separate cells. And oh joy, can you believe this? Arrestees may also determine their own gender. Well, that isn't that special? We finally get to tell people our gender. Isn't that kind of? And it goes on to talk about a person who was arrested, and she had to shower with the males and all that stuff before it was determined that she was a woman, to give an example. But apparently, D.C. is braced for all hell to break loose. Have you heard anything about that, or what are your thoughts on that?
Well, to be honest, I was at work today, and then I got home and started talking to you. So I haven't heard anything. When I checked my email earlier today, I haven't received any emails yet about it. But I'm sure if this all just happened today, I'm sure tomorrow morning when I wake up in my email inbox, there'll probably be I'm sure there'll be some things going on. I know that here in San Francisco, the first time it looked like the bill was going to go through without gender identity, there's an all-night vigil here in San Francisco outside Nancy Pelosi's office, and I know that and other activities and petitions and everything going on all over the place obviously kind of made them reconsider, because they decided not to go ahead with it right away and to think about it a little more and give people more time to make their arguments and lobby about it behind the scenes. So definitely making your voice heard in any way, shape, or form works, whether it's, you know, calling your congressperson or senator, whether it's, you know, showing up at a protest, signing a petition. I mean, every little thing definitely helps a lot. And I think that, in general, Americans, we tend to be pretty lazy with regards to voicing our thoughts and our opinions, which is sad. You know, it's rare when people, you know, will actually show up at a protest or actually write a letter to their congressperson or call their office or even send them an email. And so any little thing that gets done along this line, I mean, every little bit helps, because the only thing besides large campaign donations by potentially nefarious sources, the one thing that Congress people listen to are their voters, because they want to be reelected. And if people within their district are letting them know that they're really bothered by this gender identity not being included in the bill, they'll reconsider, you know?
Well, and that's an interesting point you make, because Pelosi made a statement on the floor today, and HRC is going on about the statement she made. Where's the article I have from HRC? In any case, she said that when the transgendered community gets together the votes to include this, then we'll bring it up again on the floor. And HRC seems to think that's a huge statement, because You know, that the Speaker of the House normally doesn't say anything when passing a bill about bringing it back up again, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. So what are your thoughts about HRC in all of this? HRC has taken kind of a hit, I think, from the transgender community for at least that's my take on it. Can you put me straight on that?
So I'll give you what I've gathered from things that I've read. I know that I think it was a week or two ago that the first time we came to this point where it looked like it was going to go forward without gender identity inclusion, and everyone was kind of waiting to hear what HRC had to say. And so a lot of LGBT groups either came out for including gender identity or kind of opposing including it because they were worried about votes. And HRC was very silent for a while, and then they said something, it was a very vague statement, but it was something along the lines of, we will not support any bill that doesn't include gender identity. And then basically the transgender community felt okay with that for about a day until the next day. The only member of the board of HRC who is a transgender person quit. And the reason behind the scenes, what was going on was they refused to oppose a bill that didn't include gender identity. And so it was just kind of this vague language so that basically, you know, to give the impression that they were pro-gender identity, but at the same time they decided that they weren't going to fight anything that did include it. And being that they're such a large organization, them stepping aside in and of itself definitely changed the momentum of that debate. And so I know the transgender community is really upset about this. I know that a couple years ago a similar thing went on where, and I think that was ENDA, and I don't know if that was a state version of ENDA, but I know a number of years ago the transgender community was very upset at HRC because they took a similar stance of not including protections for gender nonconforming and transgender people. So HRC, you know, is I don't think a lot of transgender people are very happy with HRC right now. So that's my very mild way of putting it.
and that is the impression that I'm getting. And you're right, they are the largest. I hope to God that we can count on them to get to become more vocal about this. They have been doing this for years, and they have so many connections in Congress and lobbying that we really can't do without them. And honest to God, I wish that they were more vocal about this. It's hard to wrap my head around it.
Yeah, well, I know that a lot of times different groups, the amount of I guess let's put it this way, their stances often reflect who is most active in a group or who contributes most money to the group. And HRC is definitely a lot more moneyed and a lot more kind of gay male-centric. And I think there's just a lot of not only kind of wanting to distance themselves from the transgender community, but economically for them, their donor base tends to be a lot more moneyed. The groups who have been way more supportive, I think, are groups that are coming from a more lesbian perspective or a queer women's perspective. And I think that that's because these groups tend to represent people who have less money and people who recognize kind of that we're all in the same boat a lot more. And also I think that the lesbian community in general, and I say this as someone who has critiqued a lot of elements within the lesbian community that has been very anti-trans and very specifically anti-trans women. Despite all that, that community in general is having dialogues about gender and about transgender and I guess queer women's communities are a lot more tuned into why this bill is important, not only to include trans people, but because gender nonconforming people are affected too. And I think that the human rights campaign isn't the people who contribute a lot of money to the human rights campaign are probably people who might actually get by okay if it was just sexual orientation.
I see. And to help our lesbian listeners understand that better, I think that it was a story I read in when I was looking through materials about you the last time you were on. There was an example, I believe, where you attended a huge, it was a lesbian rally, I think. I believe it was you, and there was sort of a cold shoulder thing going on, or that was kind of the feeling of, was that you, or am I labeling you completely wrong on that?
Well, I mean, it might have been something I've written. I've written a lot about the issue of trans women inclusion in lesbian and women-only spaces. I've probably written more about that issue probably than anyone, which is, I didn't say that to brag, but just to kind of point out how important that is to me, that issue. And I think within the queer women's, just kind of, and to say the queer women's community in general, because to make it not like lesbian-centric, but basically queer women in general have worked on this issue a lot more. And there was a lot of hostility, particularly towards transsexual women in like the 70s and 80s, coming from especially lesbian feminists at the time. Since then, there have been a lot of dialogues and debates and within that community, and I think particularly within younger age groups within the like queer women's community, there's definitely a lot of support for transgender people. And while I definitely am sometimes in spaces, and I should say that I identify as lesbian, you know, but my life partner is female, and I've been exclusively attracted to women throughout my life. So I say this not only as a trans woman, but also as someone who is lesbian, while I do sometimes go into some spaces that are lesbian spaces where I feel very uncomfortable, or where I sometimes receive problematic comments, or people who don't believe that I should be there, or who say really obnoxious or uninformed things about trans women. In general, particularly in younger spaces, that's not so much the case. And I think that essentially the queer women's community, probably more than any other group on the planet, has kind of talked about transgender and gender variance and kind of recognize it as not only just an important group to ally with, but also kind of as part of their community. And I think a lot of that comes from people who, couples who are in lesbian relationships where one of the partners eventually identified as male and transitioned to male. And so I think that that's a lot of where their work has come from, and also a lot of it is just because of that community's kind of interest in gender and gender nonconformity, and kind of recognizing parallels and intersections between issues that transgender people face and issues that lesbian and bisexual women face.
Well, thank you for talking about that. As you very well know, the point of this program is not to initiate any kind of a battle, but the point of this program is to help people understand each other, and you do such a good job of that. And, you know, it's interesting that you bring this out, and it seems to me that back in the day, you know, you were pointing out that the lesbian activists had worked on this for so long. Back in the day of the National Organization of Women, when that was, you know, the feminine activism was just getting started, it seems to me, if I remember, the lesbians were getting kind of the cold shoulder from that organization.
Yeah,
it
was the famous Betty Friedan. Who wrote The Feminine Mystique. She had the famous saying about talking about the Lavender Menace, which meant lesbians, and there was all this distancing, because very similar to what's going on now, where a lot of lesbian and gays kind of want to keep transgender people at a distance because they're afraid that, you know, we might soil their image and affect their chances of getting this legislation passed. Now at the time, distanced themselves from lesbian women and didn't even want them around because they were worried that you couldn't get anything that was like pro-women's rights passed or taken seriously if there were lesbians involved in it, because then that would just soil the name. That's the same thing going on again. It's just the players are different.
Very interesting. Well, the voices are certainly rising. Now, you no doubt know about Michelangelo Signorelli, and he has a huge LGBT. Of course, he's on Satellite. Now, I haven't heard his comments about this passing, less the transgendered, with the transgendered not included, but I simply cannot imagine that Michelangelo would approve of this. I'm sure that his audience, being progressives as they are, I'm sure that on Michelangelo's show there's an uproar going on about this. I just can't imagine it any other way. And, of course, our friend Ethan St. Pierre over at Trans FM, we had him on the show, by the way, Julia. He was a wonderful guest. You know, he's got to be taking the same attitude. Voices are certainly rising about this, and I think it's the tide will very quickly show that we do not approve.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping so. I know that I've had a lot of not just with regards to like being on email lists and everything, and hearing people talk about this and reading articles and everything, but also just in my own life, I know that people, and by people I mean LGBT people, the whole, you know, umbrella of people, are really talking about this a lot, and really a lot of people are very upset about this. And I think that there's this huge gap in understanding. I think that there are some people within the LGB community who don't know any trans people and think trans people are like Martians from another planet, and that like we're not even, there's no reason to like even consider us, we're not even the same thing. I mean, that's what a lot of these articles have said. And but there are other people, I mean, I'm in the Bay Area, and the queer community here is really very much a queer community. And while there are definitely some people who only exist in like gay male circles or lesbian circles, most people I know in the queer community, and these are people who may be LGB and or T, are basically all intermingled, and we all come out to each other's events, and we all support one another. And I know that lots of my friends in general in the LGBT community have been really in an uproar about this. And especially now that it actually looks like the bill's going forward without gender identity, hopefully people will take this vocalness that, you know, and their anger and the fact that they're upset about this, and use it to productive use and actually work hard to, you know, write another letter to their congressperson, or just make it very clear that this is really the wrong strategy and the wrong way to go about it.
Julia, you've used the term LGBTQ, and you've used the word queer several times, and I'm glad you have. I had a caller several nights ago who had come across the term LGBTQ and was unsure what it meant. He's not a part of our community, one of our listeners. He's a part of our community, but not one of our LGBTQ people. You know what I'm saying? He's what are the regular people on the planet? God bless them, each and every one. So I explained to him it meant queer, and he was asking, well, you know, I don't understand, because LGBT and gay and queer, why the word queer? And I said, well, you know, I think it's really more of a youth kind of thing, that younger people are adopting it, but I don't know my head from a hole in the ground on that. Can you help explain that to me and everyone else? I'm just not in touch enough to know this about queer and how people are identifying with that word.
Sure. For one thing, I definitely do agree that it's kind of a younger thing, and a lot of kind of our ideas about when people talk about being queer or call themselves queer, a lot of it kind of comes out of like a lot of the queer nation activism of the 90s. And so it's kind of a more recent reclaiming of a word that at one point was just a derogatory slur. And people who call themselves queer, I think, tend to use it in one of two different ways that are kind of interrelated. Some people find themselves kind of blurring the boundaries between lesbian and gay and bisexual and transgender. And that can happen in any way. I mean, there are a lot of people who are lesbian or gay for most of their adult lives, and then they find themselves attracted to someone of the other sex, and then they kind of think of themselves as bisexual, or maybe they're not really sure if that's what they are. There are people who are transgendered and who don't feel very comfortable with thinking of themselves as gay or lesbian or bisexual, even though their sexual orientations are that way. And so a lot of people take it on, particularly in order to make a point that they don't necessarily fall really nicely or neatly into any given box, but they are someone who is considered queer by society at large. And then there are other people who just use the term as an umbrella term, meaning instead of saying LGBT and then adding all the letters, you know, the up-and-coming letters onto the end of it, they use the word queer in kind of an umbrella sense, so that it includes all people. You know, there are straight people, and then anyone who straight people don't consider straight is queer, and that could be because of their sexuality, who they're attracted to, or could be because of their gender expression. So queer is just kind of, in that sense, it's more inclusive and maybe a little more vague, which can be good in some ways but not so good in other ways. But in general, when I say queer, I kind of use it along the same lines as saying LGBT. I kind of use it as an umbrella term.
Okay. Well, I should go back to my caller and explain that. Actually, I don't know where he falls in the spectrum. I have not quizzed him on it, so I didn't mean to define him as, you know what I'm saying, because I kind of did that, but I really have no business doing it, because I have no idea. But it was, and also the QQ came up, queer questioning. That's part of that same umbrella, meaning I'm interested in finding out more about it because it may affect me. Or can you tell us about that? Just
yeah, sure. And I guess that would fall in the first group that I was talking about, where a lot of times people, I mean, the words lesbian or gay or bisexual or transgender or all those words are very loaded words. And a lot of times people who may end up identifying as one of those or multiple of those identities, a lot of times when we're first trying to feel it out, those words seem kind of scary. And not necessarily scary in a, like, I'm ashamed of that way, but scary in that, in a very respectful way. And what I mean by that is, and I'll use my example with regards to being a lesbian. And I'll call myself a lesbian now because I've been living for 5 years as a woman, and my life partner is a woman. And in my day-to-day life, people read me as a lesbian. My wife and I are treated like lesbians. So basically, right now, I feel comfortable calling myself a lesbian. However, when I was first transitioning, I felt that it was kind of, at least initially, a little wrong for me to call myself a lesbian because I was only just starting to live in the world as a woman. And so I felt somewhat uneasy with the term, partially because, you know, it was a shoe that I never tried to wear before, but also because I felt like it would be very presumptuous of me to assume that, you know, I knew what it was like to be a lesbian, you know. And now I recognize that when I say that I'm a lesbian, I just mean that I live in the world as a woman who's attracted other women, and that's how I'm perceived in the world. And I think that there are a lot of people who have only had heterosexual relationships before who are maybe attracted to someone of the same sex, but they feel that, you know, it would be really presumptuous of themselves to just call themselves gay or lesbian or bisexual when they haven't had a sexual experience with someone of the same sex. And so that's what the questioning refers to, and it's kind of this way for people to feel comfortable exploring that without feeling like they're being presumptuous or taking on an identity that doesn't necessarily fit them or that they haven't experienced living in the world that way.
I see. Well said. And I have ranted on this show before about how desperately we need a word to describe us. One of my guests a while back pointed out to me that there probably is no word that can describe us, so we may very well be LGBTQQ, more letters, for quite a while. We are really quite divergent. I sometimes use the phrase sexual outlaws. But even sexual outlaws, just gender outlaws, it's hard to define us all as one as a group, is it not?
Yeah, definitely. I think that the one thing that we have in common is that we're generally seen because of our genders and sexualities, and a lot of times, for a lot of us, those are intertwined. They're not totally separate things. And I think that, the average person, the average guy, straight guy who's kind of homophobic, is just as scared of a gay man as he is a transsexual woman. in his mind, we're the same thing. We both represent difference and kind of a fear of kind of falling off the edge of the world. And I think that that's what all of us who fall under that umbrella, whether it's queer and questioning or LGBTQ, et cetera, we all fall under the situation where we're always having to deal with other people's problems and issues and phobias regarding gender and sexuality. We bear the brunt of other people's insecurities, and that's what we have in common.
Julia, I should probably ask you about Bailey, don't you think, at some point during the conversation. Tell us about Bailey and how far back he goes. The man seems to be established, and then the New York Times apparently legitimized him, and you were very upset about it, and I take it everyone in the transgender community was. What's up with this Bailey guy? What's the story on him in the Times?
Okay. So basically, this whole issue, it's this really huge and complicated issue that I'm going to try to boil down into a couple short sentences or a short paragraph. and then anything that you have any questions about, we can talk about more. So basically, there's this guy, J. Michael Bailey. He's what we might call a sexologist or a he is a psychologist, and he's like a sexologist, which is just a word for people who study human sexuality. And, he's very well established within sexology circles. And obviously, for those of us who are sexual minorities, there's some people who would outright claim that all sexologists are evil or whatever, and I definitely don't fall into that camp. I think that there are some people out there who actually who are both good scientists and also respectful of the people who are a part of their research. There are definitely a lot of people out there who are doing good work in order to try to help sexual minorities or to help kind of better understand human sexuality in a way that's not really arrogant or entitled. I would say that Bailey falls into the category of people who essentially sees transsexuals as his research subjects and who definitely positions himself as an expert on transsexuality. And by expert, when I say that, there's invisible quotes over that, around that. And that's because in the same way that I don't think there are any heterosexual people out there who know more about what it's like to be gay or lesbian than actual gay and lesbian people, I don't think that there's anyone who's not a transsexual who really understands what that's like and what it's like moving through the world as a transsexual and what that experience means than actual transsexuals ourselves. However, sexologists tend to show up all the time as they're the experts who know transsexuality better than we are. And transsexuals these days, unlike homosexuality, which was removed from the DSM a number of years back, transsexuality is actually still considered a mental disorder. And we actually have to get psychologists to sign on in order for us to physically and legally change our sex. So there are a number of issues here. Like, one of them is pathologizing. Another issue is a lot of the sexualizing of trans people's motives. Basically, I guess I'm going about this in a very circular manner.
it's so a complicated subject.
I'll get to the book in a second.
Okay.
But basically, transsexuals are very overly sexualized, particularly transsexual women. And, you know, if you look at the media, trans women are regularly depicted as either sex workers or sexual deceivers who prey on unsuspecting straight men, whereas fetishists who get off on the idea of wearing women's clothing. And, like, there's this constant assumption that people on the male-to-female spectrum transition in order to fulfill some kind of bizarre sex fantasy. And I talk about that a lot in my book, Whipping Girl, about the sexualization of trans women and other people on the male-to-female spectrum. And basically, Bailey's book played into all of that. The book is called The Man Who Would Be Queen, The Science of Gender Bending and Transsexualism. It came out in 2003, and the book not only forwarded a theory that essentially insinuated, it didn't insinuate, it stated flat out that he believed that all people in the male-to-female spectrum transition for purely sexual reasons, and that there are two types of transsexual women. There's one type who are really just feminine gay men who transition because that's the only way they can pick up straight men. And then there are a group called people who have autogynephilia, which is the idea of being aroused by the idea of being a woman. And the whole autogynephilia thing is really crazy and bizarre. It's basically this idea that it's actually a sexual orientation, that transsexual women who fall into that category transition because they're erotically turned on by the idea of being trans women. And so not only does this not jibe with a lot of transsexual women's experiences of themselves, but it's also very sexualizing. And particularly in a world where trans women are sexualized all the time, basically the mixture of the fact that this book was pathologizing, sexualizing, and also that he was very arrogant about it, and he said that many, many times in the book that people who disagree with his views are actually lying or misrepresenting themselves, and the fact that historically psychologists and sexologists have been considered experts on transsexuals and that they supposedly know more about us than ourselves, this essentially created a firestorm within the transgender community and specifically within trans women's communities. And so there's this big outrage against the book. And so that was the initial thing that happened. The article that I wrote on feministing.com, and people can find that on my website. There's a link to it on the writings page of my website. If they go there, they can read it.
And that website, I should point out, is juliaserrano.com. We've been posting it in the chat room, by the way, but it's juliaserrano.com, correct?
Serrano.com. Right.
Thank you.
Okay. And if you go into the main page and then you click on writings and you scroll down, there's a link to an article I wrote for feministing.com. And that was in response to a recent kind of development in the story. So essentially what happened was there's a lot of outrage against it, and there's a big backlash against the book. And most trans women and transsexuals I know feel that the book is demeaning, again, on these multiple grounds. For one thing, it further pathologizes transsexuality. It's very sexualizing and basically, I mean, I could read you some of the passages from it. They're just very sexualizing passages. And then the third aspect about is that he's really arrogant and he assumes that any transsexual who doesn't agree with his theory must be lying.
Oh, my, so, self-righteous.
I'm sorry?
I said, oh, my, self-righteous, very.
Yeah, definitely, very arrogant. And, you know, the thing is that most people out there haven't met trans people before, and so if someone says he's an expert on transsexuals and he knows more about us than we do, people are going to believe that, you know? And that was a lot of what I read this article about. So there's a woman, Alice Dreger, who has written an investigation, or what she calls a scholarly history, of the backlash against the book. And specifically, in addition to just the backlash against what was written in the book and the fact that he essentially forwards a lot of sexual innuendos and anecdotes and sells them as science. And basically her investigation of this backlash, she focused on this other aspect of it, that there were all these charges of scientific misconduct, and specifically, basically she makes allegations that some trans activists crossed the line and actually set out to personally ruin him, and made accusations or forwarded or pushed for accusations of fraud and scientific misconduct that weren't actually true. And so I don't know enough about all of those details to get into that, and in my article I kind of avoid that because I feel that that's a distraction to the main issue being about how problematic it is that someone who positions himself as a scientist and an expert basically forwards in such an arrogant way, has such an arrogant attitude towards transsexuals, and not only arrogant but sexualizing and pathologizing. And recently in the New York Times, which is let's see, I have it right here. The article that came out was on August 21st, and it was called "Criticism of a Gender Theory and a Scientist Under Siege."
Oh my!
And it was written by this guy, Benedict Harry, who's a writer for the New York Times, I suppose. Who, interestingly, just some of your listeners might be interested in this. He wrote an article in July 5th, 2005, called "Straight, Gay, or Lying: Bisexuality Revisited." also about Bailey's research. In that previous research, he basically had research, and you can look it up online, but basically Bailey had some research that suggested, or the way he spun it was that there's no such thing as a bisexual man. There are only heterosexual and homosexual bisexual men. And so the insinuation is that bisexuals are lying. Oh, that's a stereotype. Right.
Yeah.
And the research is just like, just silly. I mean, they just hooked up some electrodes to people. I think it was like a lie detector test or whatever, and they showed them porn. And like that can like sum up like sexuality or attraction towards people, like, you know. So anyway, so it's just really overly simplistic stuff that was spun in order to prove stereotypes. And that's exactly what Bailey's book was like. It basically just sexualized trans women. And he didn't really forward any of his own evidence. He just kind of took a theory that was lying around, and he essentially just kind of forced it through by saying that anyone who disagrees with this is lying. So he's kind of, this woman, I got off, she's, basically there are a lot of cans of worms in this story, and so yeah. I could probably talk in circles about it forever, but getting back to this woman, Alice Dreger, who wrote this investigation that pretty much kind of exonerates him, Bailey, from a lot of the scientific misconduct charges. And so she basically is quoted in this story of the scientists under siege. They also both recently showed up together, both Dreger and Bailey, on KQED, a show there that's a public radio station here in San Francisco.
So that's why the New York Times resurrected this, because of her input.
Yeah, and so I should say, so she's basically, her piece is going to be published soon in a scientific journal called Archive of Sexual Behavior, I think. I have to just make sure I'm not... Yeah, Archives of Sexual Behavior. And basically, it kind of clears him of a lot of the scientific misconduct charges, but I feel it's a really myopic piece in that it doesn't really... I'm actually writing a critique of it that will eventually be put up on my website, and I'm hoping to get that done in about the next 2 weeks. But basically, her piece doesn't really actually address any of the issues of sexualization or pathologization or just his entitlement of assuming, positioning himself as an expert and saying that people who, transsexual women who don't agree with him must be lying. And so I'm going to put that up soon, but what I felt like her piece totally didn't do was it, she kind of framed it as the scientist under siege, like the New York Times article suggested, where, you know, this guy, that there were these trans activists who tried to ruin this guy, right? And again, I'm not going to talk about the charges, because some of them seem kind of suspicious, some of them may be completely true, I'm not sure. But what is really important is that she positions her article as talking about the threat that, like, transgender activists or other types of activists can play on research, academic research and academic science. And so she talks about academic freedom of expression, but she talks not at all about responsibility, academic responsibility, scientific responsibility. And it just seems, it's just really sad in that when you have a community such as the transsexual community where psychologists and sexologists like Bailey have institutionalized power over us, they get to decide whether we're allowed to transition, whether we can attain a change of our legal gender designation, which is really crucial in order to, like, get a job, for example.
Yes.
She ignores the institutional power. She ignores the way he sexualizes us and calls us liars, and she just kind of exonerates the guy. And so it's a really, it's a piece that I feel doesn't really capture what actually happened during it, and that's actually the piece I'm writing, a piece to critique, not only her article, but to kind of clear up a lot of these things which she really glosses over, completely admits.
Yes, the pseudoscience aspect especially, it reminds me, the thing about the bisexual men, we talked about that at some point on this show. Apparently it was a very small study group, and basically they're saying that bisexual men are really just gay men who don't want to admit they're gay, and which it was based on a small group of people, and the science wasn't good. And it's the same thing they do to the gay community. They keep referring to something called the Dutch study, which you may have heard of, and basically it's a flawed scientific study about sexual habits of single gay men who used a lot of dope in the Netherlands, and they keep pulling various, quote, facts out of it, and because it's a study, it keeps getting quoted in the mainstream media as if it was fact. And I'm gathering this is what Bailey has done, too, just using anecdotes to back up bad science?
Yeah. I mean, basically, this is like a little short take on it. There's this guy named Ray Blanchard who created this theory of these two types, that there are two types of transsexual women. One type who's attracted to men, it transitions because they're attracted to men. And it's kind of, the way that Bailey spins it is, you know, there's one type of transsexual who's really a really feminine gay man. He actually says that multiple times in his book. And then the other type are not exclusively attracted to men, and that group, which includes myself, I should say, falls into this group of autogynephilic transsexuals who are supposedly, according to him, the reason why we transition is because we're erotically turned on by the idea of being women. And so again, you know, these are both stereotypes, right? You know, the idea that bisexuals are lying is a stereotype. And so it's really easy. You don't have to have really sound science in order to, if you're trying to prove a stereotype, because people want to believe it anyway.
Yes.
I'm sure people are very familiar with, like, phrenology, where, you know, people would, it was basically this old kind of bunk science that happened. I forget whether it was during the 1800s or early 1900s, but where they would measure the size of people's brains and, like, to try to prove that, like African Americans were, like, less smart.
Yes,
capable.
They had instruments to measure and everything. It was all...
And, you know, exactly. And there are, you know, plenty of articles that come out saying, oh, well, you know, different types of, you know, men are from Mars and women are from Venus type of studies where, like, they prove, oh, women really are bad at math, you know.
Actually.
And, you know, these are, you know, they're stereotypes, and basically they take a very complex thing, whether it's doing math or whether it's human sexuality or whether it's transsexualism, a very complex thing where there are people kind of coming from all over the map and people who have different experiences, and you try to boil everything down into, like, one or two simple camps, and that's what he tried to do in his book. He tried to take this theory that already existed. And the ironic thing is that in his book, he accuses anyone, any transsexual, who doesn't tell the types of stories that he wants to hear, who, like a transsexual like myself, who doesn't say, yes, I transitioned because I'm aroused by the idea of being a woman. And so if I don't say that, and he actually says it over and over again in his book, I must be misrepresenting myself, lying, deceiving. He uses all of these words over and over again. And the ironic thing is that the initial theory that this came out of was based on transsexuals talking about their sexual experiences. So it's a theory that's based upon what transsexuals have told sexologists. And now this guy, Bailey, is trying to say that, well, you know, if you don't agree with this theory, then you must be lying. So it's kind of like a damned if you do and damned if you don't, you know?
Well, interestingly enough...
Like either way, no matter how you slice it, he's right and
yeah,
wrong.
Yeah, makes you want to just fly up there and whack him, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, what it does is it makes me want to write, so which is why I've been kind of obsessively writing about this, and hopefully I'll get this critique up soon. And actually, in my book, for those... There might be some people in the audience who are familiar with this story and everything. In my book, I actually forward a couple ideas, basically not even proposing a new theory, but just using things that we already know are true in order to show that that whole theory is bunk, the idea that there are only two types of transsexuals and that these are the supposed reasons why we transition. I refute that. Multiple.
Well, what if? What? Yes. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just finishing my sentence.
I
refute a lot of the points he makes, a lot of the problems with his book in my book.
Right. Well, there are two things that one I want to bring up. What one of our chatters has pointed out, who's talking about the whole bisexual thing that we were talking about a moment ago. He's saying that the main flaw is that they keep trying to use the words attracted to, and he's indicating that bisexuals want a relationship, but gender doesn't matter. And that brings to mind the whole concept of not who you are, what gender you're attracted to, but who you are. And this seems to carry over into the transgendered also.
Oh, definitely. I mean, one of the things that I point out in my book is that this whole idea of, like, being... basically, the whole idea that, like, someone such as myself is erotically turned on by being a woman, a lot of it is based on this idea that that basically it comes from actual transsexual discussions of their own sexualities and having fantasies of being a woman. And basically all transsexuals no matter what your sexual orientation is, or whether you're male to female or female to male, no matter, you know, all transsexuals, when they have sexual fantasies prior to actually transitioning, we often imagine ourselves in the right body. I mean, that's a real important thing. I mean, people talk about sexual attraction, and like you just said, you know, like as if, you know, that there's this other person, and it's all about them, and it's not about our bodies. But I don't know about, you know, most people, but, you know, when I have sex, you know, basically most of the really good experiences I'm having aren't from, like, looking at someone and being attracted to them. It's from feeling, you know, the feelings from the person, and it's body sensations, sensations of being touched, and et cetera, et cetera. I mean, that basically there are two things going on in any kind of sexual relationship, and that is there's the other person who we're attracted to, but there's also our own body and feelings and arousals that come from our own body. And so with regards to the whole theory of the Bailey forwards, the fact is that a lot of it, I believe, is based on the idea that in a society where women are seen as sexual objects but men aren't, that only male-to-female transsexuals can be accused of sexualizing our own, like, identified sex. And what I mean by that is that, you know, if you're a man and you're kind of feeling very comfortable and turned on in your own body, we don't think of you as being turned on by your own body, because we don't think of men as sex objects. You don't think about it in those terms. Where someone who's on the male-to-female spectrum, who is sexually aroused by the idea of being in the right body, which for them would be a female body, it gets interpreted as this idea because women in general are seen as sex objects and are sexualized in our society, that a lot of male-to-female transsexuals, before they transition, kind of interpret those fantasies that way. And the thing that happens is that for a lot of us, when we transition, we don't experience that anymore. A lot of us don't really have those fantasies anymore because, like, we're living as women, and, you know, that idea, you know.
Very well said.
I mean, you can't interpret that same information that same way.
Exactly. You have such a way of presenting things so that people get it. Really,
yeah.
Do.
And I think that I think this is basically, unfortunately, these theories, the only people who ever hear these theories are people, for the most part, who are, like, familiar with transsexual women communities or people who are sexologists. And I feel like a lot of these sexologists, they don't even, I mean, Bailey's book is really sexualizing of women as a whole. It's just a very sexualizing book. And he has no concept of the idea that being a woman means you're sexualized in a society, and that that has very real psychological effects, which other psychologists who aren't sexologists have done lots of research on, and we know that that the fact that the media often portrays women as sex objects, the fact that women are often sexualized in day-to-day life, you know, are harassed on the jobs, or, you know, always having to deal with being inappropriately sexualized, that shapes women, and you know, there's a lot of psychology work that has gone on looking at the negative effects of all this. And so someone like Bailey or other people who promote these theories, they haven't really thought about the possibility that it might be the way that women are sexualized that create this interpretation in this particular way. So, I mean, I think that if someone really wanted to try to understand this, and as a scientist, I would say that you want to be as open-minded about everything, and you want to look at all the other possibilities. But basically, time and time again, the couple of people who have actively forwarded this theory, including Bailey himself, have totally ignored any possibility that that the sexualization of women in our society informs any of this. And instead, they just assume that transsexual women transition to be female for sexual reasons, which is the stereotype in our society. You know, I mean,
right.
Like, I've seen on movies people, like, these really horrible stereotypes of trans women as, like, men who just are turned on by the idea of wearing dresses, and that's why they transition, right? These are all horrible stereotypes that are, like, you know, just ridiculously demeaning and not based in real life, and yet those appear on TV because that's the stereotype. And it's like, there's just this inability to look beyond the stereotype and actually ask what's really going on.
I see. Well, this the fact that they have to sign off, these psychologists, Bailey, for instance, on something that is so personal, and you've used the word sexualization. In looking through some of this material, I'm finding out that some of them won't sign off unless they think that you are sexy. In other words, that's one of the criteria to you know, are you a real woman? Do you become a real woman? Is that part of the frustration too?
Oh yeah, definitely. So in my book, and other people have done this, I mostly cite other people's work. There's a long history of a lot of psychologists would only allow trans women to transition if they found us attractive. There's all this, all these criteria that were set out that trans women had to meet this really high level, high standards of femininity in order to transition.
Good Lord.
And these were standards that trans men didn't have to live up to the same degree. And I think it's because a lot of these psychologists and sexologists are men, and so they understood that there are many different ways to be a man, but if you're going to transition to female, you have to, like, be a really, you know, feminine and sexually attractive woman, right?
Right.
And I chronicle a lot of this in my book, and this is where a lot of trans women's frustration comes from. You know, it's multiple layers. It's the being sexualized, it's being pathologized, and it's having someone who's in a position who has institutional power over you to decide that, like, this is my standard and you have to meet the standard. And then on top of it, it's all of that combined plus the whole idea that this person positions himself as an expert and says he's, you know, using science to prove that, you know, this is how transsexuals really are. I would suggest, and I think probably most people in the LGBT community would agree, that if you're a sexual minority for whatever reason, whether you're gay or lesbian or bisexual, transgendered, etc., you probably know more about that experience than anyone who doesn't have that experience, right? I mean, you're in your own body, you're in your own mind, you're the one who's actually experiencing your own life experiences. And the idea that someone who just, you know, and I say this, I'm also a scientist, right? So it's not like I'm, like, anti-science or whatever, but I think that the idea that someone who hasn't had a transsexual experience can position himself as an expert and say, this is how trans women really are, and if they don't agree with me, they must be lying, and try to back that up with his PhD and the fact that he's a scientist. It's frustrating to the nth degree. I can't really explain how frustrating it is. As I'm sure that listeners who might be in the LGB category who aren't T's, I'm sure can appreciate it, being that it wasn't that long ago that homosexuality was in the DSM, which is the main book that psychologists use to diagnose people. And it wasn't that long ago that it was seen as a mental illness. And luckily, sexual orientation isn't pathologized today, but gender and gender variances, unfortunately.
I understand. And one of our chatters is pointing out this whole aspect of horror of a guy in a dress. Transsexuals also have to overcome the why in the world would a man want to give up a superior position? Pardon the way that sounds, but you know what I mean. There's that whole stereotype to get through, too. Did you have to face something like that?
Basically, in my book, I talk about this. So it's kind of funny because I know a lot of trans men, and so there are a couple, like, you know, there are these ulterior motives, like, you know, if you're gay, the ulterior motives, like, the religious right might say, oh, well, you're just looking for alternative lifestyle, or you've been, like, duped by the homosexual agenda, or all these things are just these ulterior motives to explain why you're gay, rather than just the fact that gay people exist.
yes.
And with transsexuals, people don't understand why we exist, right? I mean, we just are. There have been trans people throughout history and in all different cultures. We just happen to be. Some people understand themselves to be the other sex. And so the problem is that that people want to put these ulterior motives on us. And so, like, it's really common in the queer community for people to assume that transsexuals transition in order to, like, hide our gender nonconformity, or because, you know, we're ashamed of our homosexuality, which isn't true at all. And doesn't really have any basis in actual trans people's lives. So there's that. And then on the other side, or other ulterior motives that are often put out there are, for example, with a lot of trans men, people assume that they've transitioned to obtain male privilege. So that's a common thing. I think with trans women, they can't really do that because people don't understand why, you know, there's no obvious power in transitioning from male to female. I mean, it's not about power for us, right? It's about just kind of our own understanding of ourselves. But
you're
they
right,
want to put an ulterior motive on it. And so they assume that we've transitioned for the only type of power that women are seen as having in our society, which is the power to be sexualized.
Yeah, I knew. Julie, you are a master at explaining this stuff. And I hate to tell you this, but we're at a point in the program where I do have to close. We have another host coming on just after this program, so I do need to wrap on time. And Julia, again, you are fascinating, and I couldn't, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for doing this, and not just this show, but everything that you do.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for having me on your show again. I had a blast again.
Thank you, and Julia, good night to you, and thank you again. And folks, that was Julia Serrano, an amazing guest. I want to invite all of you to stay tuned for Joe Vecchio. Joe Vecchio's new show is called Nighttime Cup of Joe. Joe was one of our daytime hosts who has become a night creature. You must stay tuned for that. And so that wraps it up for a Strictly Confidential on a Thursday evening. And here's Cynthia Manley reminding you to...